Amber's birthday ball was held at Shepherd's Hotel. The band of the new Egyptian army played until dawn. White-robed waiters served silver trays of brimming champagne glasses. Every commissioned officer of the army from the rank of ensign upwards, 115 in all, had accepted the invitation to attend. Their smart new dress uniforms made a handsome foil to the ball gowns of the ladies. Even the Serda and Sir Evelyn Baring made a brief appearance, and each danced a Vienna waltz with Amber. They both left early, aware that their presence had an inhibiting effect on the festivities. Ryder and Saffron had made the long, circuitous journey down from the highlands of Abyssinia, across the desert by camel, up the Red Sea and through the Suez Canal to Alexandria to be there. Saffron's evening dress caused a mild sensation, even in this glittering company. She was 2 months pregnant, but of course that was not yet apparent. At the beginning of the evening, after he had collected Amber and his sister-in-law Jane from the suite they were sharing on the top floor of the hotel, Penrod filled in Amber's dance card. He reserved 15 of her 20 dances. She was a little peeved that he had been so restrained. At the stroke of midnight, the band broke into a rousing rendition of "For She's a Jolly Good Fellow," and the guests applauded wildly. The champagne flowed like the Nile, and everybody was in jovial, expansive mood. Penrod climbed the bandstand with Amber on his arm. The band welcomed them with a long drum roll, and Penrod held up his hands for silence. He was only partially successful in achieving it while he proposed the birthday toast. They drank it with gusto, and Ryder Courtney burst into "When You Were Sweet 16." The band and the rest of the guests picked up the tune. Amber blushed and clung to Penrod's arm. At the end of the song, he quietened them again. "I have another announcement to make. Thank you, thank you." The uproar subsided to a buzz of interest. "My lords, ladies, and fellow officers, who fall into neither of the first two categories," they hooted, and again he had to bring them to order. It gives me ineffable pleasure to inform you that Miss Amber Benbrook has consented to become my wife, and in so doing she has made me the happiest man in creation." A little later, Colonel Sam Adams was smoking a quiet cigarette on the darkened terrace when he overheard the conversation of two young subalterns who had imbibed copious quantities of champagne. "They say she's made herself a flash 100,000 iron men from the book. Happiest man in creation? Ballantyne has that great gong stuck on his chest, Pips on his shoulders, his own battalion, and to top it all, the lucky blighter's dug himself a gold mine with his pork shovel. Why shouldn't he be happy?"
"Lieutenant Stutterford," a cold, familiar voice spoke from the shadows close at hand.
Pale with shock, Stutterford came unsteadily to attention.
"A Colonel Adams, sir."
"Kindly present yourself at my office at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning."
By noon the next day, Lieutenant Stutterford, still suffering from a vile hangover, found himself packing for immediate departure to the desert outpost at Suakin, one of the most desolate and dreary postings in the Empire.